Hello and welcome to our still yet unnamed identity technology podcast. We're trying to pin the name down before next week's edition. We did get some great suggestions from our listeners, but please keep them coming because we haven't yet decided on the final. I'm your host, Chris Corum, executive editor with Avizian Publishing, and I'm here with Ryan Klein, contributing editor to our publications, and we're going to talk a little bit today about Real ID and the final rule that was signed into law last week. There's some interesting things that came about in terms of changes from the proposed rule, and that's what Ryan and I are here to discuss. So,
yeah, there's a big ruling this week from people over at the Department of Homeland Security about the Real ID stuff. So it'll be real interesting to see how this affects everything else down the line and what the time frames are now and see how it's going to play out.
Great. Well, that was really the biggest change, it seems to me, from the proposed rule to the final rule, and that was the loosening of the timeframes. From the beginning of the DHS rollout or announcement of the Real ID Act, which really, you know, we're commonly referring to it as the driver's license reformation. Its goal, it came out of the 9/11 Commission, and its goal is to revise the way that states issue driver's licenses to make sure that there's some minimum securities and procedures in place, both in the pre-issuance and in the post-issuance handling of those driver's licenses, as a means to protect against terrorist threats, identity theft, all kinds of things that can happen with fraudulently issued driver's licenses and credentials. But again, the big change really was in the timeframes. The states were screaming early on, saying that hey, it's an unfunded mandate. How are we possibly going to be able to accomplish it in the tight timeframes that were required? Those timeframes, the deadlines would have been coming up on us pretty quickly. May 2008 would have been one of the first significant deadlines there. However, in this new final rule that was again just approved last week, those deadlines were extended to a point where really, for the average citizen who was, let's say, born after 1964, anybody essentially under 50 years old, that they would not have to have a Real ID compliant license until December of 2014. Older Americans, 50 and over, or those born after prior to 1964, they actually wouldn't have to have a Real ID compliant license until December 2017. So it's definitely a big advancement or stretching of the timeframes that were required there, which also gave the states the ability to save a bit of money in the process. According to DHS estimates, almost 75% cost reduction from the original proposed timeframes to today by loosening up the requirements, changing the age restrictions, and things like that. So Ryan, surprising to hear, but they've been able to reduce it to a mere $4 billion that'll cost the states now. The original forecast, $14.6 billion from DHS, even higher from some of the state agent or state groups and others looking at those costs. So still a very expensive proposition, but definitely less expensive now based on the changes. Again, unfunded in that it is states who have to pay for their driver's license programs. The DHS is being very careful to make sure everyone's aware this is not a federal mandate. So you don't have to, and Ryan and I were talking about this earlier today, you don't have to, as a state, participate in this. Is that correct?
Yeah. From what I understand, that's what it looks like. But there's definitely benefits to complying as a state, and the citizens, I think, are going to really drive that once it comes down from the information that you have about that. What is that?
Well, you're right. While a state doesn't have to comply because it's not a federal mandate, if you don't comply, if you're not issuing a Real ID license by the time the deadlines come along, your citizens won't be able to use it for a couple of main purposes. One, it won't be good for boarding commercial airlines, and two, won't be good for getting into federal facilities and nuclear power plants and things like that. I don't visit a lot of nuclear power plants, but I do board a lot of commercial airliners, so if my state opted not to participate or not to comply with Real ID, the time would come when I would not be able to board an airline with a Florida issued driver's license, as my, in my case, unless Florida was complying with Real ID. So going to your point of citizen demand, I think that, you know, the feds have made it where it's going to be very difficult for a state to say, no, we don't want to participate.
If the states don't comply, they still can access those places and do those things with a federally issued form of identification, such as a passport.
Correct. So I wouldn't be out of the realm of flying or something, but it would just be, you know, more of a hassle and an extra thing I have to do. And frankly, a lot of Americans don't have passports, right. So it would be another document that was required. Ryan's been following what Secretary Chertoff of the DHS has been saying, and there were a couple of interesting points. Since we're focused on identity technology here, one of the big questions that industry, that the companies that we work with and the people that we work with have been asking is, hey, why aren't we requiring a contactless card, a smart card, a biometric card, some other of these advanced ID technologies? Because the rule has come down that the only technology required on that card from an identification perspective is a 2D barcode. You know, I think a lot of people in the industry were thinking, what a great time to require a smart card or a biometric. And Chertoff said, what about that?
Secretary Chertoff said that they have nothing against a fingerprint, really. Some states have fingerprints, some don't. He said that they're really balancing a risk here is to go to an extra step or not to. And that he believes, and the Department of Homeland Security believes, that the digital features on the license that are coupled with the embedded security features are sufficient to do the trick. States are free to have a fingerprint put on, though, and some states do, in fact, actually have fingerprints on the cards right now. So he's not ruling that out completely, but he feels that the security and if the states comply to the way Real ID is written right now, that it should be plenty secure for what is needed.
Thanks, Ryan. That leads perfectly into some discussions and comments that came out from the Smart Card Alliance recently in response to this final rule. The Alliance is an industry organization that represents the smart card industry, both contact and contactless. And obviously, they'd prefer to have smart card technology involved with the Real ID programs here. But they had an interesting point, and their executive director, Randy Vanderhoof, commented that states have a golden opportunity right now to leverage federal funding available for Real ID and add some additional dollars per license to both meet the federal guidelines and provide immense benefits to citizens in the state for the future. What he's referring to is the idea that these are minimum standards and requirements set up by the Real ID Act. The states are free to go above and beyond those. So what the Alliance and other groups will certainly be working to convince other states in the near future to say, hey, we've got this chance to now take the minimum technology required. We're going to be reissuing cards anyway, and let's improve those cards with other technologies that can enable these cards to be used for other things, such as secure logon for government services, signing of documents, access into certain venues via the contact or contactless interface. Other industries may be saying, hey, let's consider optical memory technology for this so they can become a storage and security device as well. So there are certainly opportunities to implement other advanced ID technologies on a Real ID card as long as you've met the minimum requirements that were put in place by the Real ID Act. So interesting points, and certainly the debate between the ID industry and the states and the DMVs is not over, but really probably just beginning with this new announcement.
Back to the minimal requirements, Secretary Chertoff on January 11th also was explaining how these common sense standards, as he called them, were going to work. He gave a couple of examples. The first one was that if somebody comes in to the United States and gets their visa legally, everything's great, but they overextend their visa, and during the time that their visa was still legal and everything was good, they got a driver's license. Well, therefore, going forward, all they have to do is show that driver's license and continue to renew their driver's license, and they can outstay their welcome, as he called it, in the United States. And really, at the way things are acting, the way things are going right now, nobody would know. A second example he gave was that.
So that won't be possible anymore with Real ID.
Okay, right. So pretty much that would be done and out with. A second example of how the minimal requirements are going to help with Real ID is that they're going to be able to and be required to validate all documents presented during a driver's license application at the DMV. Thirdly, he also said that one of the first steps that they're going to have to go through when applying for a driver's license is they're going to take your picture. This means that when you walk into the driver's license DMV, they're going to take your picture. If you falsify documents or something, they can track that. They can spread your picture around on a common server or something to another driver's license facility. Because now, as it stands, you can go in, falsify documents. If somebody denies you at one location, they can say, okay, sorry, I must have picked up the wrong thing or something. Go to the next one 10 miles down the road, next state over, two states over, and possibly then get a driver's license in that state, and they have no communication between the two branches.
Well, I would guess not even state to state necessarily, but you could even just drive across town if your town had multiple locations today, right, and try again over and over. So that's interesting. So those are some real world examples of how Real ID can help today beyond the potential help for combating terrorism or some of the bigger picture ideas there. Ryan, on another note, imagine we're a couple years into the future and I'm going in to apply for my Real ID compliant driver's license in my state. I know that the process is going to be different. You've mentioned that they're going to check my breeder documents or my source documents that I come in with. They're no longer just going to accept them as valid. They're going to have to go back to the issuing point. But you know, what do I use? Because right now, when I go in to get a new driver's license, I'm going to show them my old driver's license. But I'm guessing that won't be allowed anymore.
The documents that you'll have to provide going forward, once the states comply and everything, are a passport or a certified copy of the birth certificate. There's also several other less common documents for people that are born in different countries or have legally immigrated into the United States. But for most people, it'll have to be either a certified copy of the birth certificate or a U.S. Certified legal passport.
Okay. So my old driver's license that's not Real ID compliant won't work. I guess that makes sense, because if we're saying that the security of those prior issued licenses isn't good enough, it wouldn't make sense to allow that to be used as a breeder document to receive this new document.
Absolutely.
That means there's probably going to be a lot of people out there looking for certified copies of their birth certificates, since a large percentage of Americans do not have passports. Looking back to extensions, they didn't go so far as to say that everybody's free and clear. States don't have to do anything until 2014 or 2017 in some cases. They set up a series of benchmarks and said that a state can request an extension beyond the original 2008 deadlines, and then beyond the 2009 and even 2011 extensions that they receive, as long as they're showing progress toward the benchmarks that will lead them to being Real ID compliant, such as requiring the source documents that Real ID requests, such as verifying the lawful status of the Social Security and the Social Security numbers of the individuals, changing their driver's license, the actual card, so that they're integrating overt, covert, and forensic for security features in the card printing and plastics processes. Another benchmark would be photographing all applicants upon entry, even if a license isn't required or issued. That goes back to what Ryan was describing, where today someone can go in and have false documents, get turned down, and leave and go down the street. Well, in the new world, you'll be photographed before the process begins, so your photo will be on record, and you'll be flagged as someone who has tried to get a false document if you were caught doing so. So things like that, as a state proves that they're making progress, request these extensions, then they'll be able to take advantage of the extensions and put off the compliance time to where they have to truly be issuing Real ID driver's license to all state drivers.
Talking about the Real ID identification cards, just shot up in my head another ID card that has also been pretty controversial, and the pass card and the WHTI, Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative, and enhanced driver's license. Now, Chris, do you think that this is all going to end up merging onto one card, being being, you know, the same thing, or how exactly is this all going to play out, you know, in the end?
Well, there's been some progress on that already, and some talking about it. A couple of states are working with what they're now calling the enhanced driver's license, which in essence is a combination of a driver's license and a pass card. The pass card is that card that would get you across the borders between the U.S. and Canada, or the U.S. and Mexico, land and sea borders only, I believe, not airlines, but through land ports and sea ports primarily, making it quicker, less expensive, not having to require a passport and things. Those are documents that will have an RFID chip as of now, although there's lots of controversy surrounding that as well. But point with the driver's license is that eventually a combined real ID driver license and pass card functionality will certainly be a very likely next step. Now, the key there is the pass card would include the RFID chip and technology. The real ID would include the 2D barcode with the machine readable zone as required for that. So they, in essence, would be two separate programs residing on the same card. The chip, the RFID chip, wouldn't be a part of the real ID program in any way. And kind of vice versa. So but they definitely are thinking that would be a next step, and it's a logical next step for states that are in border environments where the people may travel multiple times a week, even multiple times a day between the U.S. and Canada or the U.S. and Mexico.
All right. Well, I think that's all we have for today. I hope you enjoyed our talk about a real ID and the inevitable changes that are coming your way in the next 10 years or so from the way things look.
10 years is a long time, Ryan. There was a question posed to DHS in one of the press conferences where someone pointed out that the time lapse between September 11th and the final issuance of these real ID credentials that won't complete until 2017 is an awful long time. 16 years between the event that kind of initiated this and the end of the process when everyone will be carrying these compliant cards. And the question was posed, are we living in a world with a big gaping security hole right now? Well, that's not a question we can answer here, but an interesting point was made regardless. So anyway, again, thanks for joining Ryan and I, and if you've got any comments, we're still trying to figure our way around this. So we hope you're enjoying it and getting some good information out of it. Please send us any comments you have on topics you'd like to hear, things you'd like us to discuss, possible names for the podcast, anything else you might have, to podcasts@avizian.com.
Or any questions. I mean, if we brought up something that you weren't sure about, or if you wanted to question us and say, hey, we might have it a little wrong, sure thing, we're always open to that kind of stuff as well. So
great idea, and we can answer any questions next week on the podcast when we're talking about a different topic. So thanks for joining us, and have a good day.